Hey, Dog Walk listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
All right, Bitmang, today is Wednesday. It is September 22nd. Welcome to the Dog Walk presented by Barstool Sports. Special guest on today that I'm going to get to in a second here. If you remember 2 days, you definitely remember Coach Rush Probst. I know it was a big craze back in the day. I've always been so fascinated by the show. I love the show. Only did 2 seasons. Always wonder what happened. So it was super interesting to talk to him. So that's who we're talking to today. But before we really get into it, though.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive. And the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
All right, let's head into Coach Rush Probst. All right, so here we are. I'm joined by high school football legend, two-a-day star, Titletown High star, Coach Rush Probst. Coach, I got to be honest with you. Two-a-days aired right as I was going into high school. So this was just right up my alley. And if I didn't even have this interview opportunity, if I ran into you in a diner or something, I would have just loved to pick your brain for a couple minutes. So I'm super happy you're on, and this is going to be fun. So thanks for hopping on.
No, I'm glad to be on with you, and just appreciate you thinking about me to invite me to be on.
Yeah, so let's get into it from the beginning. You seem like such a diehard football guy, obviously, evident by your record and how long you've been in the game. When they approached you with a show, you got a little Saban in you to me, where you're like, I don't want nothing to do with that rat poison media. What made you do it?
Well, first, the trust I had in Jason. And you talking about two-a-days or Titletown?
Two-a-days. Let's start at the beginning when you're like,
okay.
You know.
Well, at the time, we had been rolling pretty good, winning a lot of championships, and we were sort of the media darlings anyway in the state of Alabama. And you got to understand, in 2005, we'd already won 4 state titles, and we'd won 3 in a row. Alabama at the time, University of Alabama wasn't winning like they are now. Auburn was Auburn, and they were winning, but maybe not on a national stage as much. So really, everything sort of turned to Hoover at that time. It was a perfect storm. Well, we were needing something, and the way it was approached to us by Jason and his people was, look, there's other high schools out there that we can showcase. And any high school coach is going to tell you, I don't care who they are, the people that are going to be negative are going to say, well, I don't believe you should do that, or the people that wouldn't ask. So we were excited to be considered to be a high school football team, similar to, say, a Hard Knocks, because we knew what that was about a little bit. So it was exciting times for us in our program. When they came out and did the pilot program, and we won or we were the team that they elected to show, I think it energized our team, because it was hard to look at your football team at the time and say, okay, guys, what's the goal for this year? Mm-hmm. Well, our goal was to win a national championship. We'd already won 4 state titles, 3 in a row, but it was sort of shallow talking. When you look at a kid, if you're one of my players and I'm looking at you and I say, look, man, let's go win the 4th in a row. Again, complacency. And coaches talk about complacency a lot. And it's that evil word that creeps into any program or any business, that once you get to a level of greatness, how do you stay there?
Yeah.
Climbing that mountain's hard, but being on top of that mountain is the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life in anything that you do. So I thought that the 2-a-days came at a perfect time that where we needed something. And to be quite honest with you, we were proud of our program, and I wanted to showcase it to the nation.
Yeah.
So it was a double-edged sword, and that's the reason we jumped on it and was really excited about it. And it really helped us through the things that went on that year. It helped us win a state title.
So it was a tactical move that I think people would be interested to hear that.
Yeah, I thought it was. And I know the local media wanted to bashing a little bit about it, but I mean, here's the deal. The people that were bashing was your 2 biggest competitors. I mean, they were the ones that was probably as negative as anything, and they live in a part of Birmingham that they can control a few things in the media, so that we did get a little bit of negative, but most of the negative again was right there close. Mm-hmm. 5 miles, and I think the other one's 4 miles, you know, from our school, our two top competitors. And it's just jealousy. That's all it was, is jealousy. But our players liked it. I thought we fed off of it when we got in playoff time. Because here's why, you know, you lose a ball game, it's on national, it's going to be on national TV. I mean, it's going to be shown by a lot of people. So the thing, and the thing that we did is we told our kids, look, everything that you do or you say, you're not going to take back. And so I thought they handled it real well, and I thought it guided us to a 2005 state championship. And to this point in the state of Alabama, it's the longest state championship streak, 4 in a row, that's ever been done in that state on the largest classification.
Was there an eye-opening experience at the beginning after you filmed and you found out how big it was? Like, I was talking to the producer and the creator, Jason, and he, you know, mm-hmm. he was saying how many people are viewing it. And I'm in Chicago, you know. I don't know nothing about Southern football, you know. I know it from 2 days. I know it from watching Rush Probst and Alex and Max and everybody. So, was there like a beginning thing where you're like, whoa, this is becoming bigger than I thought?
Well, when you're in the season, you're in a cocoon. You're in a capsule where 18 to 20 hours a day of the 24 hours a day, you're in football mode. If you're not practicing football, you're watching film. You're not practicing film, you're lifting weights. You're in meetings. You're in walkthroughs. You're in nutrition. You're doing something to help you win a football game. So there's not a lot of outside distractions, you know. I mean, there's been days that I don't even know what the score of the college games are. And on Sundays, we're working so much, we don't know anything's going on in the NFL. We're in our domain working. I think when it hit home, the hardest would be when the show started the following February or August or whenever it was. I'd go to an airport and say, once the show came out, and I would go to an airport in Chicago, Hartford, Connecticut, believe it or not, I'm speaking up there on the Nike tour in February after the show had ended in December, and Les Miles was speaking in Urban Meyer, and I was in between them. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I mean, I got bombarded at the airport with people wanting autographs and signatures and pictures. And here Urban had just won a national championship in Florida. And he was blown away, man. He was blown away. And so wherever you went, whether you're in Los Angeles, any big town in America, you got just covered up. And I think that's it stayed that way a long time too. So that's when I knew it was going to be really big, is that when people, and the other thing that I thought was big too, is we had a buck cut when we sold merchandise. And so on average, we would make, now granted, I've already told you, we'd won 3 in a row, mm-hmm. and we'd been in state championship 5 in a row. So we were making about $15,000 to $20,000 profit. That first year of 2 days, that thing went over $100,000 in profit, maybe $200,000 in profit. But I do know this. We had volunteer mamas that came up. They could not keep up with the demands of sending apparel to Minnesota, Wisconsin, Montana, Idaho, Connecticut, Alaska, anywhere. People were driving down on spring break. They would come and you would have a line of, you know, 10 or 15, 20 people outside, and they're not from Alabama. They're going on spring break and they're coming by Hoover High School to see it and purchase a Hoover sweatshop, a sweat top or a shirt or a t-shirt, a hat. It's unbelievable. So that's when we knew right then that 2 days has made a huge impact to a lot of people. But here's something that needs to be said. Now, maybe Jason has said this. The biggest thing to me, and I've spoke about this 100 times, when you stand up in front of a group of coaches at the University of Alabama on a coaching clinic, and there's say 500 out there listening to you speak, okay, they're not going to care a lot about what happened in 2 days. They want to know what this offensive play means, what this strategy does, how do you practice your offensive organization, the football side of it, okay? Mm-hmm. But I thought it was brilliant on Jason's part, Chivico, to for MTV to take this. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm not sure the show would have been as popular if it had been shown on ESPN at the time, because I think you got the football junkie, the couch junkie that sits there and watches sports all day long. He may lie, he may watch it. But when you put that thing on MTV and you're branching out to a completely different clientele of people in this country, I personally think it helped the game of football, because it excited people like you. Mm-hmm. And I know you're a football junkie or you're a sports junkie, but you know people in your business, in your industry, that two-a-days influenced. Because I've got calls all the time. I got letters and emails all the time saying how much it helped their football program. Mm-hmm. Been an eight-man team out of Montana who had declared to be have a full padded full team the next year because they had enough kids to come out now because of two-a-days. That happened all throughout this country. So I think the MTV platform during that time with two-a-days was the best route to get the best exposure for our program going forward.
Yeah, I think you're totally right, because you got to have all three blends, right? You got to have the football aspect, and then obviously there's a head coaching aspect with you, and then there's kind of like there's the teen living. There's like every day of how these kids live and as high schoolers, and Last Chance U has done a great job with it. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Watching what they've done at those JUCOs, and that's a big part of football. Like, football's not just these high levels, you know, what you see in the NFL and SEC. So, totally. And there's something about the coach being like such a big part of it. Now, did the show and the success of it, I'm sure it had many positive effects, but did it have any negative effects for you directly? What were they, and if there were any?
Yeah, there was always, you're going to have some negative things too, you know, but overall, when I look at something, I look at the full gamut, so to speak. I mean, you got to look at the whole deal. And I think I would be sitting here and lying to you if I told you that everything was perfect. It wasn't all perfect. I mean, did I say things that I probably shouldn't have said? Probably so. But, you know, I'm one of those guys. I'm going to say what comes to my mind first. Bam. You know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it may not be as good. But when you look at it, you know, if you could script it out and all that kind of stuff, there would be some things I would probably change, but not a lot. Mm-hmm. I like the purity of it. That's what I like about the purity of it. So, you know, if I graded myself, I would grade it, you know, high 80 or low 90, you know. But for the most part, I feel pretty positive what happened.
Do you view yourself as a villain on the field? Do you view yourself as a villain?
In what way, you mean?
In what way? I guess it's because, you know, with the football aspect, like obviously there's been some controversies and off the field stuff. There's been some controversies, and you know, you're so successful, but that doesn't mean, you know, through the football side, you could look at it as like, oh, you know, like people say about character and whatnot. But if you get the results, then it's okay. Would you say? In just a football aspect, like would you say you're like a villain? Like you're just the guy everyone wants a shot at?
Maybe so, a little bit. But I bring some of that on too now. I bring some of that to myself. I mean, you know, so I got to take some fault at that myself. You know, I can't blame others on some of my shortcomings.
Did you have opportunities to kind of move up to go to the college ranks? Was obviously the story everyone likes saying was that Jeremy Pruitt was on your staff at Hoover. Was there any talks about going to Tennessee maybe, or any other opportunities?
Yeah, I've had some opportunities and maybe some things that I've done off the field probably hurt my chances. But, sometimes though, you're just, you know, you're born to be a certain thing. And, you know, and being a high school football coach has been, I mean, I've had a great career, you know. Yeah. I don't think it's over yet, hopefully. Mm-hmm. I've had several opportunities, and I made some mistakes by not taking some of those opportunities. Either I had a chance to go to Auburn one time in 2013, and that was a huge mistake on my part because I wasn't willing to take, you know, $150,000 cut in salary. And, you know, I just, looking back on that, that was a huge mistake on my part. Now, I would not have had the success at Colquitt County winning state titles in 14 and 15 because that happened in 13. So, but you can always look back on your life always and think, well, if I'd done this or I'd done that, things would have turned out differently. Yes, absolutely. I've got a ton of that in my background.
Yeah. No, for sure. And that's where are we going to do at Auburn?
Analyst, just an offensive analyst, and that would have led me to possibly on the field down the road. And because the guy that they hired instead of me, I'm the one who gave that name to Coach Malzahn, and he hired him. And, you know, now that guy's he's been the OC at Auburn, OC at Arizona State, OC at Southern Miss, and now he's a head football coach at Troy. So, you know, I look back at that thinking that very easily could have been me.
Yeah. No, wow, that's interesting. Obviously, probably a lot of people don't know that unless if that's one you shared the media much. But, how about Jeremy? You keep up with him much?
A little bit. I mean, yeah. We haven't talked a lot lately. He went through all his mess, you know, at Tennessee, and I've been going through all mine. So we just sort of coaches are like we just keep our nose to the grindstone and go forward. You know, yeah. We put blinders on and keep treading water and paddling upstream, you know, mm-hmm. trying to avoid – as much collateral damage as we can. So, you know, Jeremy right now is with the Giants, New York Giants. He's sort of like an analyst guy for them, mm-hmm. Quality control, whatever you want to call it. And then, you know, I'm sort of doing consulting work right now for a couple of colleges, you know, just sort of breaking film down and giving them my opinion on stuff.
Nice. And are you pretty much as diehard Friday nights? Or do you got a team in the SEC? Do you like Auburn, or what's your do you have a dog in the race?
I grew up an Alabama fan. My dad ran track at Alabama when he got back from World War II. He ran track at Alabama, so I grew up in an Alabama family. But when you're in coaching like this, we don't play allegiance to just one school. I got so many kids playing college football. I got 30 kids right now, or 25 to 30 kids playing college football right now. So,
yeah.
Like Saturday night, I watched Auburn and Penn State. You know, I pulled for Auburn first because it's an SEC school in the South. But number two is I had John Samuel Shanker, number 47, the tight end, that's a pretty decent ball game, playing there. And then so, like when LSU plays, I'll be pulling for Jay Ward, starting safety for LSU. So, you do that, but diehard, probably a little more Alabama, you know, probably, but I just don't get bent out of shape, you know, about it. Because a lot of times you just don't, if you're coaching, you don't have time. So on Friday night, right now, my son's playing football here at Piedmont High School. So that's where all my focus is on my junior son. And I've got two other children, Mary Catherine, that's 15, and my youngest son's 14, ninth grader. So my focus is on Friday night going to Piedmont High School and watching Piedmont High School football.
Who's the most successful person out of one of your programs at the college or the NFL level, if there is?
Oh, Lord. Well, I mean, there's Bill Clark would be at the top of the list probably at UAB.
Yeah.
You know, he was the first assistant coach I hired in 1989. John Gross was the second one. He's the head coach at Jackson State University. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Pruitt,
yeah.
Kevin Shearer, who's the linebacker coach with the Giants. Jeremy Rowe, DC at Georgia Southern. This goes on. Travis Pearson at Alabama State. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, David Faulkner and Matt Moores at West Virginia. They won a big game this week. David was my OC and Matt was my OC there. They beat Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech played this week. And so that's it. I think at one time where I've had something like 32 coaches have worked for me coaching college football and two coaching in the NFL.
Wow, that's quite the tree.
And a ton of them are head football coaches, too, that have worked for me.
Yeah, that's quite the tree.
That's a great tree.
Yeah. What's the what would be the reception if you walk into a diner in Hoover right now? What would it be like for you?
I think it'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, with the response that we've had, going back, we had a 20-year reunion with the first state championship team back in January. A lot of guys came and some of the coaches came, and it's pretty good. And then we'll be doing those four in a row starting, not this year, but next year, 02, 03, 04, and 05. There'll be those 20-year reunions. I haven't been able to come to the 10-year stuff because I'm coaching.
Yeah.
So, no, I think it'd be good. I think it'd be good. I hear from the Booster Club president a lot. I hear from a lot of people in town. You know, now Josh has been there now for 13 years, so he's got his own program going, and he's won on his own account. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously he's done a great job of keeping it where it is. I mean, it was in good shape when he took it over. seven straight state championships, game appearances. And I think that he took it over, and then he's won, I think, six. So at least six. So is he, there's been 11 titles won there since 2000.
Wow.
And so, I mean, you got to think that's rolling. Yeah. It's a pretty good program right there.
Big time. And obviously I asked that because what was the ending like there at Hoover? What can you say about it? And, you know, kind of how, you know, the show ended, and then we didn't get any closure with Rush. You know what I mean? We never saw what happened. So you'd have to do your own research to find out. What would you say? How would you sum it up best of what happened?
Well, I made some mistakes. Not any on the inside of the walls there. I know there's things that were said that are just not true. You know, Wikipedia puts stuff out there that are just, you know, the word alleged is a bad word. They get behind alleged, but then they don't ever prove it, you know, or there was no proof to it, but they don't go back and do a rebuttal on it or retract something. But, you know, we didn't do anything majorly wrong on the inside of the deal, you know, so all the pressure was from the outside, you know.
What about Colquitt? What do you think the reception would be if you walk into a diner there?
Really good.
Really good?
Really good. Really good. Yeah. I mean, I hear from him a lot and a ton. I mean, you know, so I mean, I'm very well received at both places. You know, I'm sure I've got my detractors. I mean, I'd be crazy to sit up and tell you and think that I don't have people out there that don't like me, you know, because I've made mistakes. I've made personal mistakes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all I can tell you is, you know, I've moved forward in my life. My family is phenomenal. I got a great family. All my kids are really good. They get along very well. So I'm happy where I am in my personal life right now.
Hey, let's take a quick break here to talk about my friends at Roman. Roman, you guys know the drill by now. If you're just sitting there and you're going the old school method and you're just hoping that things are going to work out in bed, if you're just hoping you're going to last long, if you're just counting ceiling tiles, if you're just looking at the ground and you're just thinking of ways to last longer, it's just not a good method. I mean, it's not smart. Stop doing it. Start getting into bed with Roman. How about that? That was a good one. Start getting into bed with Roman. Roman swipes. They're clinically proven as a way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and they're fast acting, but they don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipe out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. To get your hands on them, all you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/walk. That's GetRoman.com/walk. You get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose the monthly plan. That's a deal. Once again, GetRoman.com/walk. Go get your swipes. Make sure you're performing better in the bedroom. All right, let's hop back into the interview.
Yeah, and then obviously I'm going to – the last one, the one that we just watched entitled On High on Netflix is Valdosta. Is the same way? Do you think it's still good reception there? Or you think it's just that one guy who had a problem with you or what?
No, there was more. And he was the main one.
Yeah.
The problem with Valdosta is simple. I go in late, get hired late, and during COVID, they just fired a coach. He had a lawsuit. Alan Rodemaker filed a lawsuit. So there was a major split in the town, major split. And then after that, I get a text 3 or 4 days later from the superintendent. And he basically says, look, I think his vote's going to go the same way. I'm going to recommend him to still be our coach, but I don't think I've got the votes to keep him. And if not, then I want to talk to you. Well, second vote come around on February 9th. Same thing. They voted him out. On the 11th, I voted him out on February 11th. And on February the 14th, I met with Dr. Kaysen about the job. Well, it took him all the way to April 14th to get me hired. And so I think at the end of the day, I go in a tough environment. Well, that guy, Nub Nelson, was still connected to Alan Rodemaker. That's where his loyalties lied with the guy that had just been fired. And he was a guy that – so there was a structural problem to start with the Touchdown Club. The Touchdown Club had made a very bad mistake 4 years earlier by making him in charge of their club. And I think it made everybody else in the club sort of just come to meetings but not really do as much. He was doing it all. Well, then he gained power. And he felt like the program, he should run it the way he wanted it run, not the way the coach wanted it run. Well, the first year Allen takes the job in 16, he wins the state title. That's the first one they had won since 98, which is unusual at Austin. So that, I guess people thought that that was running right. But during the interview process, I was told by the administration that we had a problem with the touchdown club. I think they wanted me to come in and fix it. But, you know, and I think there was that friction coming in that caused him to do that. And I think there was some time, not a big conspiracist, but we do know that those tapes were significantly altered, intentionally altered by an administrator there that was not for me, Nub, and some, and the lawsuit that drove me into it. So, you know, that's the part that you're in a whirlwind of a mess the day when you walk in the door.
Yeah. Wow.
And then he didn't use it. He didn't use it until we removed him in February.
Oh.
Now, Tate was done in May. Well, he don't remove me till, we don't remove him till the end of February. Like February 22nd is when we ousted him out on a 10-1 vote in the touchdown club that he would no longer have anything to do with Valdosta football. And then when 5 days later, he drops the tapes.
Wow. See, I mean, Nub Nelson, that's a villain's name right there for you, right?
Yes.
That's a
absolutely.
That's how you could go. And then do you get into the whole drama side, Coach? Like, do you care about that, the whole goose stuff? And or what do you think? Are you a Zoe guy? Are you a Lindley guy? What do you think about that?
You know, here's what I tell people all the time. It's part of life. It's not made up. I mean, we're not in a world that where boys just – have blinders on. They don't look at girls or girls don't look at boys. I mean, it's the part of life that you and I, everybody went through.
Yeah.
When you were 16, 17, 18 years old. We used to call it puppy love, I guess, when I was in school, but I mean, it's part of real life. Yeah. And it's something as a high school football coach, you got to manage.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of guys out there. They won't meet things head on. They just won't. And I'm not that guy. I'm going to meet things head on. If I think it's affecting our football team, I'm gonna meet it head on. So I think that's a good part of the show is it shows a little bit of the stress of what teenagers go through and what they're dealing with when they leave our building.
Mm-hmm.
They leave our building. It gives me an insight on what's going on. And then if you see it becoming a problem, like with Amari, I had to deal with it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's tough because, like, you know, Amari and Morgan seem like great kids. And,
they are both good kids.
Yeah. And it's different with what you're dealing with. Is that what you get the most heat for? For, you know, like just being honest and being like, hey, I'm trying to win here.
You know, at the end of the day, they bring me in to win football games.
Yeah.
You can say what you want and then you can do all this and do all that. And you have all these little programs over here and these little programs over there. But at the end of the day, you know, if you don't win football games, you're not going to be there long.
Yeah.
In any of the schools I've been at. So they can talk all that jargon all they want to, but at the end of the day, you better win football games. And you better make sure that you're doing everything you can to give your team the best advantages or the best – not the easiest route because it's never easy to win, but you got to give them every opportunity to be successful. And cutting down on distractions is a major part. I've always argued this. This is where I had gotten in trouble at Colquitt with the hotel stay. Is that stuff you just saw? And about the same thing is when you don't put a player in a hotel the night before the game, we've been very successful since we started doing that back at Hoover because it puts extreme focus on the task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
There's no girlfriends. There's no phone. There's no laying up at 2:00 in the morning. So when you look at a superintendent's eyes and you say, look, I'm taking my players and put them in a hotel. And he looks at you like, oh, he's thinking about the negative side, or they're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He don't understand that at 2:00 in the morning, those kids are on their games and their phones talking to their girlfriends and not getting proper rest or nutrition. Well, they're going to say, well, you know what the next question he's going to say? He's going to say, well, that's a parent's job. What world are you living in? What world are we? Is that guy living in? That's what I'm saying. They sit behind their chrome, their thing, sit behind their desk sometimes, and they don't really know reality. And that's the thing that you've got to protect them. And I think our team's focus, especially when we stay in a hotel the night before a ball game, you go back and check our record. I would dare say I would think it would be 90% win percentage.
Yeah.
90% because of the focus. And that just gives you an edge.
Does that worry you though about, like, you know, a lot of people thinks like it's, you know, everyone's getting a little soft, and you know, parents complaining and stuff. Have you seen it like happen? Like, you've seen it happen before your eyes. Like, you've coached for so long. Like, how different is it now? Where you're like, every little thing, is that what it feels like? Every little thing someone wants to pick apart.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, you just gotta hold your ground, though. I mean, there's a great clip. I told Jason earlier today. There's a great clip of a mother coming on the field at Hoover, confronting me about her son missing practice because the judge had made him miss practice. And I lied into her pretty good about, you know, no judge is going to tell me what I want about practice. You know, we're going to practice football, and if he's not here, he's going to be punished. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, I mean, the football team didn't get him in trouble. He got his own self in trouble. So I think that was a good clip, and that would show a lot of people out there how I run my program, is that, you know, there's a high expectation of productivity that you must do to be a football player for me. I mean, there's a huge investment. But let me say this to you. If you invest as much as I ask you to invest, you're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a year-round thing, and it's hard. It's not easy. And sometimes mothers look at it and go, man, that's just – he's asking an awful lot. I am. She's exactly right. But the flip side of that is not just the championships. Is all the scholarships are rewarded. Over 250 of players that have played for me over the last 20 years, has received scholarships.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. It establishes a work ethic in their life. If I could show you the emails and the texts that I get on a weekly basis of the players, or now on Twitter, Instagram, they'll send me messages all the time about, Coach, how you taught me back 20 years ago, 15 years ago, is I still use that today. And I've gone through a tough time in my marriage, my business. I had cancer and had to fight through it. Or my mom just died. I just had one last week where mother just died. So I think the things that we're instilling in those players from a work ethic and from a mental toughness, because that's what I think in this country right now that we're having a little bit of lack of, is just mental toughness. And I think football is one of those sports that developed that in a very constructive way. Now, is it sometimes brash? Is it sometimes I can be too much of a hard ass? Yeah, I can. But you know what? So is that business guy that's your boss, or that professor, or that doctor that comes in and he's cold. He deals with it every day and tells you that your mother has died of cancer. I mean, those things are real life things. And what do you draw on? If you've never been pushed to the limit to develop mental toughness, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Or work ethic.
Yeah.
So if a player leaves my program and he's developed a work ethic for life and he's developed some toughness about him for life, we won. Regardless if he won a championship or not, regardless if he won a state – regardless if he went to play college football or not, if he got them other two areas taken care of, work ethic and mental toughness, I am proud. I'm a proud coach, and I get them often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to adapt to someone at some point in their life. So,
absolutely.
Might as well adapt to you early. So, are you worried about the game, though, as far as, like, you know, the whole concussion thing and less numbers in the field and everything like that? Does that worry you?
A little bit.
Yeah,
I was asked that. I spoke at a thing the other night in Anniston, Alabama, and that was asked about the CTEs. And, you know, I think that college football, as much as the NFL, because of the money they're making, and even us in high school, we've got to continue to strive to make the game safe, but don't go overboard.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you an example, if everybody remembers this. Saturday night, Auburn playing Penn State. There was a hit on the goal line by the McLean kid from Auburn, the linebacker. Mm-hmm. I thought the kid from Penn State was going to score if he didn't clean him up. And he hit him. He was up off the ground moving towards the end zone. He hit him in the side, kept him from scoring, and they threw him out for targeting. That was a terrible, terrible, terrible call. And there's no excuse for that. for him, that kid to have been targeted, could hit him in the head. I could see that. But the kid was moving forward. He wasn't moving downward. He was moving forward. So that's my point. I think we got to continue to make the game safe, and I think they've done an outstanding job of taking steps to do that. But we've also got to understand that this is a violent game. It's a physical game. And we don't need to fall for the politically correctness.
Yeah.
Of doing it this way to appease the minority, the vocal minority out there that probably don't like football anyway. Mm-hmm. But what I think we continue got to do, the NFL and college football and high school, is continue to make it safer and make equipment safer.
Yeah.
We got to put the research in the equipment to make it a safer game. You're telling me that we put people now in the, we put them up in space, regular civilians, fly them all over. They'll be going to Mars at some point in time. Yeah. You know, but we can't build a helmet and a shoulder pad that can prevent safe. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a good point.
We can figure, but so what's got to happen? You know, there's only about four helmet companies out there. So where's that congressional money that's going into the research? You see what I'm saying? Or yeah, some of that. Yeah.
We need Elon Musk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we put some of that money in. And if we care about this sport, there's two things.
Yeah.
Help continue to strive on the CTE level. And the second thing to me is officiating. And I worry about officiating in this game is that we've got a lack of officiating. I think the ones there are doing a great job.
Yeah.
But I just don't think we have as many people going into officiating. And we're seeing it on the high school level, especially in Georgia, where games are going to have to be played on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday because there's not enough officials for Friday night.
Wow.
So, yes. And so that's really scary that we could possibly – this game could be hurt because we don't have enough officials to officiate the ball games.
Now, that seems unacceptable. That's got to be corrected.
Well, and we got to pay them more. I mean, yeah. I get in that argument all the time that an official makes $130 to call a football game. Well, so what? I mean – let's pay them what they're worth and where they'll go out and try to be better at it. So if you're paying them more,
yeah,
they're going to work at it harder.
Yeah.
If they're just using it for the love of the game, that's just not good enough. That's just not acceptable. We're talking about having a professionally officiated football game where these kids are going to have these memories for the rest of their life. I just don't think we need to have an incompetent official or something incompetent happens on the field that affects a kid for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and I think, too, you talk about the CTE thing. If you watch Titletown High on Netflix, like I'm talking about here, it was really good. You should go check it out. But one of your guys, the wide receiver, I forget his name, but he went out with a concussion towards the end there, one of the last episodes in the playoffs. And I think maybe in years prior, you know, without the knowledge, maybe that somehow that kid goes back in. That doesn't happen now, you know. So
no.
I think strides like that help, too.
Well, the coach is out of it, too. I mean, there's nothing I could have done to get him back in the game. The doctor, Chip Sanderlin. But again, Chip's a great doctor, actually. He's been nursing me the last week and a half. But every high school is going to get to a point to where a neurologist or, you know, in NFL, there's neurologists at every game, more than one. There's an independent. And there's teams, so there's probably three or four neurologists at every NFL game. You know, I think in college football, the same thing. You know, you've got neurologists that are making those decisions along with the trainers. High school football, you still got a trainer or orthopedic doctor that maybe don't have all the expertise that a neurologist would have. So sometimes I think when kids get hurt, They guard on the side of caution when the kid really could go back in the game. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But that doctor don't feel comfortable doing it because if I'm a doctor, I probably wouldn't put him back in either.
Yeah.
You know, because if I got to go, if something happens and I got to sit on the stand and say, well, I fixed ankles or elbows and I made a decision for the child to go back in with a head injury. So I just think there's going to have to be a lot of research done and continued research, continue to make this game safer. And so we do have issues in the game of football, but it's still the greatest sport out there. It teaches so many positive things. Is there negatives? Always there's negatives to everything. You know, I watched a kid. I didn't watch him, but I was there. at Colquitt in 2017. A kid got hit in the dugout in the temple with a baseball in between innings. They were warming up, and it killed him right there on the field. Yeah, and so it can happen. A lot of different things. I still think relatively football is a pretty safe sport when compared to other things. It's still pretty safe. So, but we just got to continue to strive. Don't rest on our laurels.
Yeah.
Keep working.
There you go. I got two more questions here, Coach. You got one is obviously, why did Goose wear so much eye black?
No, it's just a thing. I mean, they have all these, the same reason that, you know, Tom Brady does some things he does. I mean, let's go, you know, or just every player has their own little things that they do to make them feel comfortable. And now there's a line that you don't need to cross. So my line has always been a little bit crooked. You know, I understand that a little bit because you want to make your player feel comfortable and confident. But then again, you don't want him to be out there in orange shoes when everybody else has got black shoes. That makes sense?
Yeah, totally.
So there is some things out there that I feel like that you've got to be uniformed. You know, I'm an Alabama fan. You know, that Penn State, we use those two schools, USC, Notre Dame. Those four schools, all of them, and the traditional blue bloods, Oklahoma, Nebraska, they don't all look the same. Mm-hmm. Dan changed. So there's a lot about tradition, just like here at Valdosta High School. I mean, Valdosta's uniform has been the same for decades on top of 100 years, maybe. I don't know, not 100, but you know, I'm sure it's changed a little bit through the years. But still, it's still the same. And I think that's the big deal, is that you've got to stay uniform. But then again, you got to let your players have a little bit of freedom. And like Goose was a kid that he loved a lot of eye black because it made him feel tougher. Yeah. It made him play tougher. Hey, who's to say it didn't? I know how tough he was. I know how hard he played. So who's for me to say that eye black didn't help him be better?
Do you keep in touch with those guys much? Max, Alex, and those guys? I mean, those were the original guys, right?
Yeah, a little bit, not much. I text Ross back. Peyton, their youngest brother, is a starting second baseman at Alabama. And he was born in 2000 when I got to Hoover. Phenomenal baseball player. He'll be a pro baseball player, no question in my mind. But so I reached out to Ross, and we text back and forth. I talked to Alex a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. I hadn't talked to Repeat in a while. Max Lerner, you know, his stepdad died of cancer in the last 6 months. So Jim Counts was his name. Great man. And so, but I keep in touch, you know, with him from time to time. It's just, you know, when I was coaching football, you're so busy, you just don't have time to talk to anybody. You barely have time to talk to your own children, much less talk to everybody else.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And then, you know, like I said, I got a buddy. We still say the quote to this day from that locker room speech: "Let's go whip their ass." Can I get a "Let's go whip their ass" from you?
Oh no! Let me think how I can say that and make it even better except for. Oh God, you put me on the spot there just to say, "Let's go whip their ass."
That was perfect. Coach, thank you. Go watch Title Town High. It's on Netflix. Yeah. I really appreciate you sitting down. This is fun.
Well, last thing I want to say, Jason Shabiko, man, he's a brilliant guy. And you know, one thing people didn't realize too on Title Town is that go back and look at what he did at Florida State, Notre Dame, Navy, and Kentucky basketball. Just those four sports things. That's sandwiched in between two-a-days and Title Town. And if you talk to those people prior to, they were a little bit hesitant, I'm sure. But now what it did for their programs, it showed a different level, a different side. Man, I'm telling you now, the guy he's brilliant, and he knows what to look for, and he knows what to do, and he does, and it's not scripted either. That's the good part.
Yeah,
and I just think that it's really, you know, you get that quality. You can call Jimbo Fisher, you call Brian Kelly, you call Coach Calipari, you call those guys at Navy football. They'll tell you that show helped them, and it's got to help them. I mean, it's exposure, man. When you can have pure exposure like that, it's great for your program. So, again, I think you're always going to have a little bit of negativity because people are jealous, you know, and they'd like to be, they'd like their team to have that opportunity. But no, Jason's on the rise. He's done a great job. I've been privileged and honored to work with him, and hopefully we can continue to work on.
And hopefully you'll be coaching again soon, right? I mean, that's the plan. That's the goal.
That's the goal. I mean, I'd like to. I think that I've got a lot of years left in me.
Okay.
You know, with early 60s like this, I just think, you know, I've always said I'd want to coach somewhere between 65 and 72. And if I went to 72, that's 10 more years. So 71 would be 10 more years. So, I mean, I want to coach some more. I still have that burning desire to do it. And, you know, when I get through talking to you today, I'm just going to jump on and break some film down for one of the universities I'm working for. And that still gets me my blood going to sit there and dissect somebody else's offense and then give those what I think to that defensive staff on that college staff. So I think that's the fun part. That's still fun to me. Mm-hmm. It's not boring at all.
Definitely. Well, wherever you coach next, I hope Jason hits you up, and I hope it's film because it's always entertaining, Coach. So thank you again for doing this.
Thank you, bro. Thanks for having me on. It was a great interview, man.
Awesome. All right, that's it for today, everybody. We'll see you next time.